Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Grace Wan, in for Alexis Madrigal. Maybe it's because reading is a life skill that we don't often think of it as a hobby. But for author Shannon Reed, reading, whether she's digging into a book or scanning the back of a cereal box, is a comfort, calling, and pursuit that captures her fully. In her new book, Why We Read, she delves into all the reasons we turn to reading. We'll talk to Reed and some Bay Area authors and hear from you. Why do you read? That's all coming up next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Grace Wan, in for Alexis Madrigal. Author Shannon Reed is just one of those people with the right name, because Shannon Reed loves to read. Yes, she's a writer, but more importantly, she's a reader. Whether it's the latest literary masterpiece, the guilty pleasure of Amish romance fiction, or a sign on the subway, Reed will read it. She reads for pleasure, for comfort, and for free pizza. She has a new book that's part memoir and part love letter, Why We Read, on bookworms, libraries, just one more page before lights out. And she joins us from WESA in Pittsburgh. Welcome to Forum, Shannon.
Thank you so much for having me, Grace. It's delightful to be here.
Yeah. We also have two Bay Area literary stars and friends of Forum joining us this hour. Oscar Villalon is the editor of Ziziva, the San Francisco-based literary journal. Welcome to Forum, Oscar.
Good to be here.
And we have Vanessa Waugh, author of Forbidden City and A River of Stars. She's a former columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. Welcome, Vanessa.
Hi, glad to be here.
Yeah. And listeners, perhaps you love to read too, and we want to hear your stories. What is it about reading that you find satisfying? What are your earliest memories of reading, and how have your feelings about reading changed as you've grown? Email us at forum@kqed.org. But first, let's turn to Shannon. Shannon, when I was reading your book, I thought about how we don't really think of reading as a hobby so much as whether it's like more like a life skill. It's something most of us are doing constantly, so maybe we don't give it any special thought. But why should we give more consideration to reading as a hobby or pastime?
Oh, that's such a great question. I feel like it is indeed a life skill. I mean, one of the things I talk about in the book is that my students, I teach at the University of Pittsburgh, I teach undergrads, will often say to me, oh, I don't read it. That's not something I do anymore. And then they will immediately turn back to their phones and continue reading whatever it is that they were reading on their phones. So, of course, we are still reading all the time as a skill. But I think, as you ask, it's nice to sort of step away from that and also think of reading as a pleasurable or knowledge-giving or something that we can do for ourselves that's more than just practicing a skill, that's opening us to new worlds, new people, new voices, teaching us things, taking us out of our own dreary lives. I know I turn to it for that a lot.
Mm. Well, you, as I said in the intro, you write this book and it's part love letter, part memoir, and an explanation of why you love to read. And you have this really lovely exposition of what reading means to you. Can you share that with us?
Sure, absolutely. Would you like me to actually read from the book?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Sure. So this is from the preface to the book. And I should say, leading up to this section, I write about how I was born with a hearing impairment and I am still hard of hearing, and that sometimes just interacting with people, much as I like people and much as I like interacting, was very stressful for me as a child. It was hard to hear. It was hard to get the information that I needed. It was hard to get across the idea that I am hearing impaired to people as a child. And reading was always like the safe, perfect way for me to get information. And so in this section, I sort of summarize that thought. Much as I like videos and reels and whatever new thing has been invented by the time this goes to print, I'm always reaching back to the OG form, the book, looking for what I can read to help me understand. Reading a book is quiet, clear, and organized. It's not hard. It waits until I am ready, pauses when I need a break, and is still happy to repeat. Reading absolutely never says, just forget it, when I need clarification. It doesn't care how I pronounce the words in my head, or aloud for that matter. It never makes me feel worse, and rarely makes me feel lonely. Reading gives me the world.
I mean, can you talk a little bit more about the safety that you find in that act of reading that's in comfort?
Absolutely. I think for me, it's the sense, good communication is so important to me. I want to understand what people are saying. I want to be understood. And that can just be frustrating in a world where I and other people are often not listening closely, and I and other people are maybe not able to listen as closely as we would want. And reading to me is just such a pure form of information giving. I can just read the words, reread them if I need to really understand what I think the author is trying to get across to me. In fact, I have to say, I talk to my students a lot about rereading things, that I'll assign them a short story and I'll say, don't get too excited, it's only 5 pages, but you should reread it a couple of times to just be able to get at all the information, the tone, the mood, the feeling that it's trying to get across to you.
And when it comes to reading it, though, you teach writing and you are a professor and you've also been a high school teacher and a preschool teacher. But when it comes to reading, one thing I gathered from your book is it often doesn't matter if it's a masterpiece that you're reading or maybe even like a brochure for insurance. You just love to read anything. What happens in your brain when you are reading, especially for those people who might not like to read?
Yeah, such a great question, because there are lots of people out there who don't like to read. And I'm lucky. I don't have impediments to how to read that other folks do. So I really want to acknowledge that just picking up a book and reading is not something everyone can easily do. But I think what happens for me is just like my everyday thinking ahead, planning, perhaps slightly anxious, worrying about how people are feeling, wanting to make sure everything is okay for all the people in my world, shuts down a little bit. And I go into the world of the book or even the cereal box sometimes to just be in that place instead. And that's just a lovely sort of mini mental vacation for me.
And your book is divided into these short chapters with reasons why you like to read, and whether it's to break rules or to finish a series for love or even to feel a little superior, which probably is the least cool way to read. And for you, when you think about the ways that you've learned how other people like to read, what stands out?
I think the people who usually most struggle with reading are the ones who feel that they have to read a certain kind of thing and they have to have a certain reaction to it. They might feel that they must, that to be a good reader, they have to read classic novels of the canon that were written hundreds of years ago by people who didn't have anything else to do except write books, which is not true for us now. And that they should be profoundly moved and changed by these books, and that there's something wrong with them if they, they read Moby Dick and they don't come away with like a different understanding of the role of humanity in the universe. That's just so much pressure to put on, one novel and on themselves. I think those are the folks who struggle with reading, at least in my world, the most.
Mm. Vanessa, while I wanted to bring you in, I mean, there's a lot that we've talked about already about loving to read. And you're a writer, and I think you can relate a lot to what Shannon's been saying. I'm curious about your earliest memory of reading and what it opened your eyes to.
Sure. And I love hearing what Shannon has to say. I don't know if I have a first memory of reading, although I do know it was before kindergarten. I have an older sister who's 8 years older, so I feel like she must have helped teach me. But I vividly remember reading Under the Covers after Lights Out, and my dad coming down the hallway and hearing the footsteps and then like sneakily turning off the light. But then he checked the heat on the light bulb and knew I had been reading still. But I think for me, I'm the American-born daughter of Chinese immigrants. And so very early on, I realized the world inside my home was different than the world outside of it, whether with my classmates or what was depicted on TV. And so I was trying to understand that difference, to get at the inside of things, whether that was through observation or through books. And so for me, books like Anne of Green Gables, Joe March from Little Women, or Laura Ingalls from the Little House series, these were all strong-willed girls and then young women who made their way in the world, who had ambitions of becoming a writer. And even though we didn't share the same era or background, it opened possibility for me that I could also dream these dreams and become a writer someday as well.
I mean, you weren't wearing a bonnet, but you thought, I could pick up a quill. Is that what you were thinking, Vanessa?
Well, I can make butter in a jar.
Oscar Villalon, you're the editor of Zizova magazine. Suffice to say, you read a lot for your job. Were you always a reader?
Yes, I was. I had a disposition for this vocation. I think, according to my mom, ever since I was very, very little, four or so, I would just read anything I could get my hands on. Usually reading the back of cereal boxes. there was a thing that my mom told me that every week when they would go to the grocery store, this was in Los Angeles, they treat me and my brother to some sort of, toy, whatever you wanted, or whatever was in the toy aisle. And my brother would, always get like a cap gun or something like this. And used to confound my dad, but I would always pick a book. Mm. It's like, and there was something about it at a very, very early age that just resonated with me.
Oh, that's so cute. And I also think cereal manufacturers need to really rethink what's on the back of the boxes.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of new customers to be found from that. Jen on Discord writes, I'm a big fan of fictional and sci-fi worlds and the adventure and escapism I could find there. I also love reading stories with compelling characters and getting caught up in different ways of being. I watched an interview with an actress who said she wanted to act because it would be the closest she could get to experiencing every emotion ever. And I think reading does something similar for me. Well, these are really lovely stories, and we're talking about reading, why we love to read, what reading does for us. We're joined by Shannon Reed. She's the author of Why We Read on Bookworms, Libraries, and Just One More Page Before Lights Out. Reading is a teaching associate professor and director of the undergraduate writing program at the University of Pittsburgh. We also have Vanessa Waugh. She's the author of Forbidden City and A River of Stars, and also a former columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. And Oscar Villalon. He's the editor of Zizova, a San Francisco-based literary journal. And listeners, we've got you. We'd love to hear why you love to read. Is it for comfort, connection, a guilty pleasure? Was there a book in your childhood or later that hooked you on reading? And have your reading habits changed? Tell us why. You can email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org, or find us on our social channels at kqed.forum, or give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. I'm Grace Wan, in for Alexis Madrigal. More Forum after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Grace Wan, in for Alexis Madrigal. Today we're talking about why we love to read. Why do you love to read, listeners? Is it for comfort or connection, a guilty pleasure? You can email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org or find us on our social channels. Or you can give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We're joined by a panel of readers, people who like to read anything. The backs of cereal boxes is turning out to be a really popular reading place for these guys. We have Vanessa Waugh. She's the author of Forbidden City and A River of Stars, a former columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. Oscar Villalone, he's the editor of Ziziva, a San Francisco-based literary journal. And Shannon Reed, the author of Why We Read, On Bookworms, Libraries, and Just One More Page Before Lights Out. Shannon, you write in your book about a time when, in the pursuit of free pizza from Pizza Hut, you went on a reading tear. This is one of those, you know, classic book contests to get kids to learn how to read or want to read. I think you read hundreds of books for this, but from that experience, you learned to read fast, maybe not so deeply, and later in life, you realized maybe you weren't the best reader. What happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, shout out to the Pizza Hut Book It program. They kept me well fed. and I loved Pizza Hut as a kid, and my family did not. So I think that because of those Book It coupons is why I got to go to my favorite restaurant. Yeah, what I did is I mistook running my eye over every page for actually taking in the information that was on the page and being able to follow the story. I just read to rack up points to have as many books as possible to win as much free pizza as possible, which is, I have to
These
say.
These are noble pizza. Pursuits.
Yeah, free pizza is not the worst prize to have your eye on. But yeah, and I read about when I went to grad school for the first time. I went to NYU, and I was in a class called Dramatic Criticism, where we had to read long articles and books about dramatic theory in theater. And I just couldn't do it. I mean, I would run my eye over the page, but I wasn't actually taking in the information. And in my head, I was like, oh, great, good for me. I'm skipping through this as quickly as possible. No problem. I'm going to have this homework done in no time at all. And then when I had to take the test on those works, I realized that while I grasped the vague outlines, and I had indeed run my eyes over every single page, I had not actually absorbed any of the information because I was reading much too fast. And that was when I started to step back from that, racing through books and starting to think more about, like, maybe it would be more effective to actually learn and take in the information from these books, whether it's a textbook or an article, but also novels. Like, novels are so carefully and beautifully written. I want to slow down and enjoy the language and not just sort of race through and be like, yep, got that one done. Mm.
Oscar, as a literary editor and writer, I'm just curious, how do you read? Is it with a pencil in hand, with, you know, sitting at your desk? I mean, how do you read to absorb the massive amount of material that you must be reading for your job?
I read slowly is what I do. I do read with some consideration, but it's not used because just out of, you know, an aspect of my job. It's just that, and I'm sure Shannon could speak to this, you know, the more you read, the more you realize that books are in conversation with each other. And when that happens, you find yourself pausing a lot and, teasing out a line from something you're reading and how that may connect to something you've read before. And when it ends up happening is that, yeah, sometimes you do read, in fact, with a pencil in hand, only because you're making notes, you're jotting, you know, the marginalia about what this reminds you of or what this speaks to. It's sort of like a running. Imagine it's like you're doing your own commentary on your Criterion, a DVD.
Yeah.
You know, I remember. You know, it's so funny that this person wrote this because this speaks to something else I read somewhere else. Isn't that interesting? Yes, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, I would love to read your annotated version of what you've read. It's probably pretty interesting. Vanessa, how do you read? Is it also with an eye to read slowly, deeply? What's your process?
Well, I'd say I'm platform agnostic. I read in bed, in line, and then I will also listen to not only audiobooks, but PDFs that convert it to voice as well. So I will sometimes listen to books on a walk or while weightlifting or driving. So there's just always opportunities. I think actually we haven't even talked about audiobooks, but I do think listening is an important practice, both as, you know, as a writer, because you can hear things in your work, or say, I also teach graduate student writing, in your students' work that you might miss while reading in print. And so, yeah, I mean, I have to look for sort of those interstitial moments, given that I have 12-year-old twins and caregiving duties with my mother. I can't be precious about my reading time. I make it fit wherever I can.
Well, Shannon, there's something about reading out loud that really has you, just as you did earlier in this program, focus on every word and give it some weight.
Absolutely. I'm always telling my students that before they turn something in, I teach mostly fiction writers, to read it aloud, that they will teach themselves so much about the story, not just in the sense of like catching errors and catching misspellings and that kind of thing, but the arc of the story, the thread of the story will become more apparent to them as they read it out loud. And I think that it's just an old school like way to take in information, is to listen to someone telling you a story. It feels very familiar to us who had parents who did that. You know, telling a story around a campfire, the oral tradition of poetry, all of that is just, it's in our DNA.
Well, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Malcolm in San Francisco. Malcolm, welcome to, let's see if we can get Malcolm here on the phone. Malcolm, welcome to Forum.
Thank you.
Hi, Malcolm. How old are you?
4. Actually, I'm almost 5.
And what do you like to read?
I like to read Star Wars comics.
And why do you like to read, Malcolm?
Because it wakes up my brain.
Oh, that's a really good reason to read. And do you have another recommendation for us?
I like to read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Ooh, I love that book.
And Alice in Wonderland.
Another good one.
And I think that's it.
Well, Malcolm, thank you for calling us.
Bunny.
Oh, and Bunny. Oh, I perfect. Thank you so much for calling us, Malcolm. I hope you stay a reader. I mean, how great is that? Malcolm and his recommendations. I mean, Malcolm is right. Reading wakes up our brains, doesn't it, Shannon?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just love hearing what Malcolm had to say about reading. That was so fantastic. And it just made me stop and think about, like, it's so amazing that Malcolm is reading the same books that I read when I was a kid, that my mom maybe read when she was a kid. That thread is really beautiful.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Valina from San Francisco, welcome to Forum.
Good morning, Grace. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to put a plug in for our public libraries. I'm a product of the LA Unified School District, and I was an immigrant separated from my family living with my grandmother. And, you know, reading was all I could do. And we had a local public library near our apartment, so that's where I went after school. And like one of your guests, my life at home was very different than this new American life, and I wanted to learn all about it. So I learned it through reading all of the American literature so I could read understand the history, but also some of the less literary types of books, Sweet Valley High and things of that nature. And that love of reading came from access. And when my children here in San Francisco, when they were old enough, we went to the library and all the wonderful programs and the incentives they had during the summertime to read. Incredible. Wow. I just wanted to make sure that people still remember our library.
I mean, I'm a big library person, too. Thank you so much for calling, Valina. And nothing will tell you about American life than Sweet Valley High. So, I mean, Vanessa, I think you can relate to that, right? The beauty of the library as a place to open up your world to reading.
Oh, definitely. And also just a note about Sweet Valley High, 16-year-old blonde twins with aquamarine eyes and gold lavalier necklaces.
It's not that you remember it or anything, Vanessa. It's not
right.
That it's not
imprinted. That I don't have them stashed on a corner of my bookcase now. But yeah, I mean, libraries for me are, it's so meaningful to me. I remember going there and getting a huge stack. It felt like winning the jackpot. And it still does. And just being able to come home with, and even, you know, again, now as an adult, I love taking my kids there. It's one of their favorite things to do still. And as a, you know, when I'm doing research for my novel, interlibrary loan gets me access to books from all over the state and, you know, access to resources all over the planet. So I'm extremely grateful and a product of libraries as well.
We have so many comments about people's joy and love of reading. Justin writes, "The joy of reading out loud can't be beat. I have an elderly neighbor who is a mineral collector. He subscribes to research publications about the science and history of gems. I read out loud to him as he is not easily able to read himself anymore. We explore places like Mogok Tract, where famous Burmese rubies have been mined, or the legend of emeralds in Colombia. We go on adventures together, letting the words we read together to guide us and capture our imaginations. It's one of the highlights of my week." And another listener writes, "I remember having a hard time reading as a child until the Harry Potter series came out. After that, reading exploded into my consciousness and identity. I'm a reader. And then following that, I'm a writer. Even if it's not a daily habit for me, these things become part of my life, and I come back to them regularly. And please don't forget, audiobooks are books too, even if we don't, quote unquote, read an audiobook, they still count." And finally, Anne writes, "I cannot live without books. There is no greater joy in life curling up with a good book. I creep inside the world and leave everything else behind. I imagine the characters. I hate them. I love them. I love the smell of the book, flicking through the pages and the covers." I mean, Oscar, I feel like there are a lot of potential subscribers for you here.
Oh, that would be lovely. That would be nice.
So, you know, these people who just find that coziness of the book and falling in love with the characters, I mean, that's such a wonderful feeling to feel that connection. What have you had those moments in your own reading where you just thought, oh my gosh, that person is me. I am that person.
I don't, not, you know, apples to apples, one-to-one, but I've certainly had those feelings of sort of like, of connection. You know, the thing about reading that is amazing, I dare say magical, is that you're engaged in an incredibly intimate way with another intelligence. And you're in communion with this intelligence. And out of that communion, this sort of liminal state is created, which is to say you're kind of like in the present, but not, you're just outside of the present. And in that sort of mindset, you feel things you might not have felt before. You're aware of things. You're given a vocabulary that you did not have before. And so what ends up happening is that you end up identifying with all these sort of different characters that otherwise you might have thought you may have had nothing in common with. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back to the phones. Anna Maria from Sacramento. Welcome to Forum.
Hello. Yes, I am 70 years old, but in my 20s, I decided that if a book didn't grab me, in other words, if it was too full of stereotypes of what is beauty and what is femininity, what is masculinity, it would go out the window. And now in my 70s, if I love a book, I will buy it and I will read it many, many times, even though I know the ending. And one of my favorite series is the Anne Lackey Justice of Mercy, which I have read the entire four book series about four or five times.
Love it.
And I will probably read them again.
I mean, there's a comfort in going back to the old standards or things that you know. Shannon, you've said it is okay, as Anna Maria has said, to put down a book that you're not loving. You can give yourself a break.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to be really clear, careful here, because I don't want my students to be like, I don't have to read what you assigned me.
Okay, so it's different if you're in class. It's different if you're in class. Okay.
Indeed, indeed. But I feel like life is too short. Unless there's a really compelling reason that you feel you have to, you know, you're having lunch with the author the next day or you're married to the author or something like that. Otherwise, I really feel you should be able to just put the book down. I would say, in my own experience, I have often found that when I came back to the book years later, I was a different person in some ways, and the book could sometimes speak to me differently. I was more receptive to it. I understood better how to read it. I had some sense of, Oscar was talking about the sort of conversation that books are having with each other and within us, and maybe I was further along in that conversation myself and able to take in the book better. So I'm reluctant to say I will never finish that book, I will never read that book. But yeah, if it's not doing anything for you and you're not going to be tested on it, put it down.
Mm, yeah. And there's also that joy that Anna Marie was talking about, of just returning to something that you know is comforting. I find myself doing that when things are tough in the world. It's like, mm-hmm. I just want to know what the ending is. Mm-hmm. And Vanessa, do you ever have that feeling? Like, I just want to go back to something I know what's happening here.
Well, I definitely did that more when I was a kid, that I would reread, you know, those Little House books, the Little Women over and over again, even though I knew what would happen. But I think I get that sort of same comfort with reading books in a series, say the Elena Ferrante, My Brilliant Friend series, the quartet of books where you're returned to that world, watching these girls grow into womanhood and these questions of art and feminism. But incidentally, it was a book that took me 3 tries. The first one to read, I kept like not understanding, not being able to sink into it. But then a friend, and we haven't even talked about this, suggested what turned out to be a karaoke book club. Oh. We read through the 4 series, and we would discuss it at dinner and then go out and sing karaoke. And those were the perfect match.
I mean, so. I like a little singing, a little book, maybe a little booze. That sounds really fun. Let's read some more comments. Mike writes, my grandmother, who passed away 2 Fridays ago, deeply influenced my love for reading. She nurtured my curiosity and pursuit of knowledge, teaching me the value of understanding both the world and myself. Reading allows me to explore the minds of authors and characters, providing perspectives that enrich my personal judgments and ideas. Inspired by my grandmother, I read to foster equality, fairness, and justice, and to continually strive to become a better person. Well, shout out to Mike's grandmother. She sounds amazing. And another listener writes, delighted that there is someone else who reads cereal boxes as I have done since childhood. Now I read histories and memoirs of other perilous times to learn how others endured. It all starts with the cereal box, people. That's how to get people to read. This is a forum, and we're talking about why we love to read with Shannon Reed. She's the author of Why We Read on Bookworms, Libraries, and Just One More Page Before Lights Out. We have Vanessa Waugh, author of Forbidden City and A River of Stars, and Oscar Villalón. He's the editor of Zizava, the San Francisco literary magazine. We're hearing from you, listeners, about why you love to read. Was there a book in your childhood or later that hooked you with reading? What was the role of reading in your childhood, and has it changed since you've been an adult? And where do you like to read, and how do you like to read? Email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org. Find us on socials at KQED Forum, or give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. I'm Grace Wan, in for Alexis Madrigal. More Forum after the break.
At Star One Credit Union, everything they do is in your best interests. They want to make banking easy and help your money grow. So Star One invests in technology to provide you with the best digital banking experience. Need a mortgage, auto, or solar loan? Their rates are stellar. At Star One, they're all about building lasting relationships by providing financial products and services that put you first. Become a member at StarOne.org or drop by any of their Bay Area locations. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Grace Wan, in for Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about why we love to read with Oscar Villalón. He's the editor of Zisifa, the San Francisco-based literary journal. Vanessa Waugh, the author of two novels, Forbidden City and A River of Stars. Vanessa's also a former columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. And we have Shannon Reed, the author of the book Why We Read. Reed is a teaching associate professor and director of undergraduate writing at the University of Pittsburgh. And we're also hearing from you, listeners, about why you love to read, and we have Elizabeth from San Jose on the phone. Elizabeth, welcome to Forum.
Thank you.
Tell us, why do you like to read?
I'm a former elementary school educator, and I just have so many magical experiences with books through that and personally. But I wanted to share that my husband and I have recently helped support a family who fled Ukraine. And when they arrived, one of the first things we did was take them to the library, and they all got library cards. And that was such a profound experience for me. And so fast forward a few months, you know, they go to the library regularly and get big bags of books for their children. And they were sharing with me yesterday that the night before, their 7-year-old daughter read their 18-month-old to sleep. He was laying on the bed very quietly listening to her read her books in English and fell asleep. And she walked out and said, you know, Mom, turn out the light. And that was just such a beautiful break for her parents. And it was great for her language acquisition. And it was just beautiful for the baby to, you know, be immersed in that lovely experience. That's really moving for me to hear about that.
It must be so gratifying to be the person who introduced them to the local library.
Yes, yes. It was so powerful. They even got a card for the baby, so all four of them have them.
Well, I hope somebody introduces them to Sweet Valley High. That might be Vanessa Waugh who does that for them. Thanks for calling, Elizabeth. What a great story. You know, talking about the types of books that are out there and going back to the reasons why we read, one of the other stories that struck me in your book, Shannon, was basically what I'm calling the big boo-hoo, you know, that book that just makes you cry. And you note that there is a near universal truth about books regarding dogs, that they will have a sad ending. Mm-hmm. So tell us what happened when your teacher read Where the Red Fern Grows. And just spoiler alert for everybody out there, it's not good.
Yeah, it's not a book that ends really with a cheerful ending. Yeah, thank you for asking me to tell that story. I just have to say, as an aside, like the stories that we're hearing from people calling in and sending in their thoughts are so beautiful. And I'm kind of moved to tears myself a little bit. And that's perfect for telling the story because it is a story about crying. When I was in, I believe it was second grade, my, maybe it was third grade, one of my elementary school teachers at that time decided that she would read Where the Red Fern Grows to us. And it was kind of a strange thing because we were a little old to be read to, but she was so good at it and she read with such emotion and such purity that I think we all went for it. And we did not, we were so young and naive, we did not understand that a book about a dog, two dogs actually, was going to end with bad news for those dogs. And as we got, as she was reading the ending of the book, the sort of climax of the book, she started to cry and then we all started to cry.
I mean, how could you not with that one?
Truly, truly. And I remember looking over to the person to my left, had their head down on their desk, like tears coming down, like the desk was wet with their tears. And then on the other side, the other student had their head like thrown back, just sort of wailing into the air. And a assistant principal kind of came by to see what was possibly happening.
I mean, I have a memory like that where everybody just wailed when we got to the end of that book. But we were a little older. We were in fourth grade, I think, a little bit more prepared. Vanessa, I wonder, you're a writer and a reader. I mean, is that the ultimate writer dream moment when the person connects with the stories, the words on the page so much that they have this intense emotional reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I've not that I want to say I'm in the business of making people cry, but I have received notes from readers saying they felt deeply moved to the point of tears. Mm. And but I mean, I think it, for me as a reader, it ranges from Javier Zamora's Solito, which is a memoir of his traveling from El Salvador as a 9-year-old, that had me bawling by the end of it, as he talks about how his still lingering hope to reconnect with those who accompanied him on his journey. But I also remember reading Ian McEwan's Atonement, and there's a twist ending. And I remember being so angry, not at the writer, but at what happened to the characters, that realization that I tossed the book across the room. So reading definitely does have that ability to evoke both deep emotions, whether it's sadness or anger or, you know, some other deep emotion.
Well, let's go back to the phones. Jennifer in San Francisco, welcome to Forum.
Oh, for the bread, fur, and growth. Oh, my gosh. I remember that, too.
Yeah. We should have done a trigger warning for that book. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Anyway, the reason I'm calling, just two memories. I'm a 70s kid, and, you know, we didn't have internet to set. So it was either playing outside or, you know, going to the library. So every single Saturday, my parents would bring my brothers and I to the library, and we could get anything we wanted, as many as we want, anything we wanted. And every time we would stagger out with 10 books each, and then we would go and get an ice cream. And then at night, my sweet papa would read to me, and every character, a different voice, a different tone, a different everything. It was just, it was beautiful. And I remember so clearly, by the time all of us kids got to kindergarten, we knew how to read a little. We definitely knew all of our numbers, ABCs, our parents' names, our address, all that. And the teachers were just stunned. Mm. And, you know, I carry this with me to this day. I mean, I'm looking at my side table. I have 4 books. But I couldn't live without the library books, the memories that it brings me of my parents, my dad, who's no longer here, all of that. It's magical. But one last note, my awesome sister-in-law, Kelly, has her master's in library science, and she is a rock star.
Okay, well.
And,
always like
a
plug.
Libraries, libraries, may they never fail. I mean, they enriched my life in ways that I just can't even pay back.
Well, thanks so much for sharing that those memories. And I'm sure your father is delighted, Jennifer, that you have remained a wonderful reader. Barbara writes, I use Hoopla, which is a fantastic way to access content on a device like my phone. I read Jane Austen books every few years. They're very fun. Love Austen's use of the English language. Great characters who are hilarious as well as touching. Others I read over and over again, Charles Dickens, George Eliot for sure. For contemporary writers, especially if I like one title, I will look up at the library to see what else they've got and explore. And Andrea writes, I wish covers were more generic so that cultural and ethnic identity was not offered up. Certain books are specific to those important details, but do Harry Potter and Hermione Granger really need to be white? Or Henry Higgins or Ramona? The covers are fun if you identify with the color of the drawn skin on the cover, but they also take away from a broader audience that could put themselves in that story. Also, another shout out to libraries. My mother was depressed and the library was my haven. I absolutely love my librarian, Mrs. Brown, who was so loving, supportive, and always found me the right book, or 5 of them. Oscar, I wanted to ask you about this, the idea of representation in books. I mean, it's obviously improved tremendously in the last couple of years, but can you find representation in a classic?
I think so. Well, again, you know, So first of all, you have to answer the question, what is a classic? What makes it a classic?
Mm-hmm.
And presumably what makes it a classic that is that despite its specificities or whatever, you know, in terms of what the characters look like and where it's set, there's some sort of universal truth in that novel, in that poem, in that story that makes it transcend those specifics. So that, you know, someone like me, let's say a second generation Mexican-American, grew up in government housing in San Diego, could read that and see themselves in it, right? Mm. So Another way to answer this is to say, years ago, I saw Paul Auster, the great Paul Auster, as City Arts and Lecture, and basically talking about the power of prose. And this, I think, relates to what we're talking about in terms of reading, the magic readings. And he says, let me tell you quickly a narrative. Once upon a time, there was a little girl, and this little girl lived in the woods in a cabin. And in the cabin were her grandmother and her grandfather, right? And he says, without me having to tell you anything, you already know what that little girl looks like. You already know what the woods look like. You've painted that picture, you know? Mm-hmm. For him, such as, you know, like all these classics were all set in Jersey. because likewise, like for me, everything I've read that was sort of like these classics was somewhere in San Diego. I mean, because that's, you take from what you know, right? And then you without even thinking about it, project that into the story. Mm. That is if it's truly a work, a classic, what we would call a work of literary art. Mm. I think when something fails to reach to that level, then there's something, you know, where there's no sort of subtext, where there's no sort of greater truth at play, then it becomes sort of like, what the hell is this? You know, what's this about? Like, I don't know. You know, so this got nothing to do with me, you know, and you would be right to just move on.
I love the idea of transposing everything to your home state, like to Jersey or to, you know, San Francisco. That's so funny. I love that. Let's get back to the phones. Jerry in Concord, welcome to Forum.
Oh, hi. I can't believe I got on. And I would just, yeah, to that. And, well, I immigrated here 12 years ago. When I was 12, I didn't know hardly any English. And fast forward, I'm now retired. I find that I'm rereading Chinese children's fable stories, and it brings back very good memories.
Oh.
And so it's kind of reading comic books, I mean, different things. So I'm rereading it, and I got Chinese paint, you know, brushes and ink, and just meditatively just copy.
Oh.
And so I thought that kind of it's a different way of thinking of reading. And I shout out to the Chinatown Branch Library. When we moved here, I spent my whole time in the library. I think this is my story. I'm sticking to it. I read all of the children's books to teach myself. So I'm appreciative for libraries, and I just thought reading it backwards now. And I just recently read The Little Prince. So I thought it was just a kind of different way, a roundabout way, but appreciating literature just the same.
Well, thank you for sharing that story, Jerry. And I totally believe that you did read every book in the Chinese, the Chinatown Library. That makes sense to me. Shannon, there is some joy in going back to where you started as a reader, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the pleasures of writing this book, I read at one point about the Little House on the Prairie series. And I actually went back to my childhood bedroom at my mom's house and got that series down. I remember the yellow spines. I cracked cracked them open and felt that distinctive kind of semi-rough paper on my fingers. And I just was transported back to that world of playing with pig bladders and, you know, building houses on the side of riverbanks and all of that stuff. It was lovely to be back there. And it was fascinating to me that it didn't take much effort at all to just be back to being an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old reading those books.
Simpler times for Ma mm-hmm. and Pa Ingalls, but tough times. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd like to see that story transposed to Jersey in the form of Paul Auster. Caroline writes, these days, whenever I'm in a waiting room at a doctor's office or anything, I'm almost the only person who's reading a book rather than looking at my phone. And another listener writes, I grew up in a suburb in a place and time where no one cared what the kids were up to at their own time. We were immensely bored during the summer. So in high school, I read Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. I had a lot of uninterrupted time. I don't think kids have that kind of time anymore. I mean, Vanessa, you were mentioning that, you know, you try to find places to read whenever you can. You have a very busy life as a teacher and a writer and, you know, caretaking. Do you find that your own kids have the time and space to read?
Well, I think especially if you turn off the internet.
Oh, yes. Okay. Helpful.
Then then it becomes, you know, you make it a part of the routine, right? This relax, and then this thing that we do together, we're sitting together sometimes, all reading our own books. And they, you know, for many years, we were reading aloud to them, chapter books too. This wasn't just confined to, you know, before they could read. And so it's definitely a family tradition and habit. And so I hopefully they will associate that with those great feelings that some of the listeners calling in had. Like, this becomes part of who we are as a family.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, audiobooks and that being a legitimate form of reading, especially when you are busy. I mean, do you find audiobooks is something that is in your kind of wheelhouse, Oscar?
You know, for audiobooks, for me, I just don't have a concentration for it, to be perfectly honest. It's, for me, it's too passive. You know, for me, what makes literature come alive, or what makes books come alive, is, you know, I'm turning the key on the engine. You know, it stops when I stop. And what ends up happening for me with audiobooks, I understand, I mean, I just don't, my brain just can't do it. I just tune out. After a while, I can't keep following the thread.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I have legitimately fallen asleep while reading and listening to an audiobook. So I tend to do that lying down, though, not while I'm driving. So last words here, Shannon. I mean, in terms of your love letter to reading, what are you reading now and what will you be reading next?
Well, that's such a great question. Right now, I'm reading a lot of student short stories, which is such a gift. I was just telling them the other day, like, you know, 3 weeks ago, their stories didn't exist, and now these worlds do. And so whether it's a student short story or a published book, like, that's such a wonder to just be able to be in somebody else's world like that. What a pleasure.
How about you, Vanessa?
Well, since it's International Women's Day, yes, I do want to sort of give a shout out to four books that I've been reading and loving. The Translator's Daughter by Grace Lowe Prasad. I Would Meet You Anywhere by Susan Ito, which is a memoir. Island Rule by Katie M. Flynn, and Tough Broad by Caroline Paul. I understand she was on the show earlier this week, so they should all hit your shelves today or, you know, anytime this year.
Okay, sounds good. And Oscar, anything that we should be reading? Oh, I think we've lost Oscar for a little bit. Well, we'll have to leave it there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm back. Yes.
Okay, Oscar, quick, in the last 20 seconds, what should we read?
Check out Lauren Markham's new book, A Map of Future Ruins, and Jula Martin's wonderful book about a season of wildfires, I think it's called. I'm probably making that. And Rita Bullwinkle's new novel, Headshot.
Oh, all good ideas. Well, we've been talking about why we love to read with Shannon Reed, the author of Why We Read, on Bookworm's Libraries and Just One More Page Before Lights Out, Oscar Villalone, editor of Ziziva, the San Francisco Literary Journal, and Vanessa Waugh, author of Forbidden City and A River of Stars. She's also a former columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm Grace Wan, in for Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with guest host Scott Schaefer, and keep on reading.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.